Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
We cross to Israel for our first report of the morning. And of course, it is a very, in inverted commas, interesting time there, a very worrying time. The big question, I guess, is what happens now. Avi Abela is the voice and the pulse of Israel broadcast program. Avi, good morning. Thank you for joining us. How are you doing?
Boker Tov, Howard. Doing as well as possible. Last night we, in a sense, celebrated one of our sons finishing his stint of duty in Gaza. So we're left with one fighting there instead of two.
Well, that is at least somewhat of a relief, no doubt. Is there assistance offered to kids like him that have been there? I mean, it has to have been a very, very difficult and in many ways traumatic time for him. How does the step down work? Is there such a thing?
That's a great question, Howard. And believe it or not, today is the step down. They're being put up in a hotel to enjoy being out before they go home, and they have a day full of talks with therapists and social workers to try to help them process and assist in whatever ways before they jump back into life.
Yeah, because it can't be easy, that transition. You know, they've lived a very, very different reality. And although Israel is very aware and very much behind them and on a war footing, life to a large extent is still relatively normal. And to integrate back into that, I imagine, is very difficult.
Correct, 100%.
So, well, good luck to him. The reaction following the assassination of Ismail Haniyeh and, of course, the Hezbollah second in command as well. Firstly, has Israel commented at all on their involvement in Haniyeh's death?
Yes, I think Israel for the first time really officially took responsibility for both of them.
Okay.
So that's something that is basically it's a real first.
Yes.
Because Israel usually never officially takes responsibility. So that is a huge sign in terms of the state of Israel sending a message to the whole world, especially to our enemies and to the whole Arab Muslim Middle East, that we will go anywhere and do anything to hit who we have to hit. Again, the fact that Israel hits a targeted attack in Beirut and in Tehran,
no
stronger message than that we're able to go anywhere to do what we have to do.
There was also talk last night, and it sort of came and went. There was talk of an attack in Damascus of a similar nature, but it seems to have been denied and certainly wasn't confirmed at the end. Did you know anything or did you see anything of that sort?
No, correct. All the information is the same information. Hearing about it, but yet hearing no details being reported and no official responsibility being taken for it by the state of Israel. So that's also basically been ignored by the news cycle.
Yeah, that's what I've observed as well. Let's talk about the what next, because I would imagine Netanyahu saying last night that Israel some challenging days ahead. What is that? You know, that's often code for something. What is the code here?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, I think it's important that people understand that in general, I mean, I don't know how familiar people are with Professor Israel Uman, the Israeli professor of game theory who won a Nobel Prize a number of years ago. But for years, he's always said that what is pretty much basic, but he gives it across based on his experience in game theory, that if you want to prevent war, well, you have to be threatening to go to war. Meaning the more you say you don't want war, well, that gives over a message of weakness to your enemy, and your enemy will will, in essence, go to war against you. And here we're dealing with a reality where Israel keeps on telling the world and our enemies that, no, 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 we're not interested in war. Meaning even now, after Israel made these targeted strikes in Beirut and in Tehran, you have Israel's defense minister saying straight out, we're not interested in escalation, we're not interested in war. So basically we're waiting, and we're only going to react if we have to react. And again, based on Professor Uman's game theory, pretty simple analysis, then not only is that not going to stop the war, it's just inviting the enemy to continue to attack us. So it's clear that there is going to be a next step. And something that I know I've spoken about here on this program with you for months already, explaining how it's inevitable that we're going to have a full-blown-out war in Lebanon to destroy Hezbollah and push it back north of the Litani River, because that is the only way Israelis are going to return to their homes without any fear whatsoever. I mean, personally, I was just up north the beginning of the week, and I was speaking to Israelis living up north, and they were telling up in the Golan Heights, and they were telling me how plenty of people they know are not returning to their homes, who evacuated, unless they feel 100% secure that they're never going to be hit by rockets or potential terror attacks.
And who could blame
like Hezbollah? So it's pretty clear that war is inevitable, even if our leaders' message to the world and to our enemies, we are not interested and we're not going to do anything and it's up to you and test us. So that, I mean, if when that's going to happen, no clue. How long we're going to still be playing cat and mouse, only reacting pinpoint to what they do. Like, even though tactically these targeted strikes with the strong message that we're able to get you no matter who you are and where you are, even in Beirut and Tehran, is a strong message. Strategically, it doesn't do anything to bring any closer the return of the 80,000 evacuated residents back to their homes, because Hezbollah is still on the border. So it's inevitable that we're going to have to go into Lebanon. It's inevitable that Hezbollah is going to react. And I know my second son and his unit, they were supposed to come home. They just came out of Gaza for a little break before they are sent back in. But instead of being sent home, even though they're not in Gaza, they're still on base, on what's called Konanut, on being on call to be called to go up north to react to anything, because the army is prepared for the reaction and the response to what happened in Beirut and Tehran. So it's a strong message, but it really does nothing to bring us any closer to end the war, because no matter how senior a terrorist is taken out, he is replaceable. And Israel has been doing targeted strikes for decades, and they're always replaceable. They're always replaced. That doesn't end their intent to destroy us. Although we could pat ourselves on the back, but it doesn't bring us any closer to the end.
Well, in terms of Hamas, the way I keep thinking is if Israel has done a good job of destroying the infrastructure, which it largely has in Gaza, and yes, of course, that there are pockets and there's still many tunnels and there's still the hostages. So there's obviously a way of communicating, but it has to be fairly limited. And now you take out the most senior person, the commander of Hamas. There has to be confusion, chaos, a lack of direction within the organization that does assist in fragmenting the structure of Hamas, surely.
100%. For sure there's confusion in the ranks. For sure their upper ranks have been hit tremendously. The organization, I mean, it's basically an army. Hamas is not a terror organization. I mean, even the way Israel explains it, for the first time in this war, as they never did before, how they have officers of battalions and commands and everything. So for sure, Israel has given them a huge blow. And taking out this senior official in Beirut is a huge blow. But that doesn't take away the understanding that the organization's charter is about killing Jews all over the world. Right. So it doesn't make a difference how confused they are. They are going to continue until they're totally annihilated and they get the message that they will never succeed. And again, according to my basic understanding of military strategy, unless you take land away from an enemy, you're giving them no deterrence from ever continuing to strike, because they know they will continue. Even if their senior commanders are gone or if they're weak, they can grow and another day and rearm themselves to continue to attack. So the destruction that we've brought about Hamas and the physical infrastructure in Gaza is tremendous, but that's not a win. And that doesn't allow Israelis to return to their homes down south either today. Because they have to feel that there is no chance whatsoever of terror ever happening again. They were they're emotionally scarred with a trauma of people they once thought were peace partners who they loved, who literally massacred them in their homes. So they don't want you talk and you hear some of these Israelis talk who used to be the biggest peace supporters on the Gaza border. They don't want any Arab to remain in Gaza whatsoever. They're that fearful of what they experience and the trauma they experience. And there's what to say about that, because it wasn't Hamas who attacked them. It was rather regular Gazan non-combatants who came and infiltrated their homes. So no matter how many senior commanders Israel takes out of Hamas, wherever they are in the world, unless Israel totally takes over the Gaza Strip and sends a message to Iran and Qatar that no matter how much money you put to rearm and retrain terrorists in Gaza, we're never going to allow that to happen ever again, because we're going to physically prevent it by being there. I mean, in my opinion, then the terror against us is just going to continue. It might just take time for them to rearm and regroup, but it will continue.
Very, very interesting. Do you think before I let you go, the tension in Israel, the anxiety, the worry, is that felt everywhere, or have Israelis really become quite used to knowing that, well, the next few days are always difficult?
It's a fascinating question, and I think anyone in your audience who's visited Israel can be able to say for what they witnessed themselves that, yeah, we're living in this twilight zone reality where on the one hand, life is normal. I mean, I go to work in Jerusalem every day, and you see in Jerusalem, life is normal. And I was just in Ramat Gan in the center of the country, near Tel Aviv, and life is normal. Yet on the other hand, we're all prepared to run to our bomb shelters and be in there a few days if a potential attack from Iran or Hezbollah begins, meaning a massive barrage attack, and we have to be in our safe rooms for a few days. So we're all living with that in the back of our minds, but it's not stopping us from living real life. So yeah, on the one hand, it's this twilight reality, but that is the reality today. And there is the resilience of the Jewish people in Israel today. Despite this, you see, again, I was just last night with my son's unit. They had a celebration, not a party, but an event celebrating how they finished their current stint in Gaza. And you're talking about thousands of IDF soldiers that just came out of everything they were doing. And it was a wonderful, happy atmosphere for guys that just came out of Gaza for 2 months with everything they experienced and might continue. They know they could be called up north any second. So it's a fascinating in terms of anthropological study in terms of how the Jewish people in Israel are handling things today. But I prefer to be optimistic and looking at the on the happy side and seeing the real resilience of the Jewish people, because no matter how crazy the situation and how scary the situation might be, we continue living and living life and being happy and getting married and having children and celebrating and as if we're not at war whatsoever.
Absolutely incredible. Avi Abela, that's where we leave it. The voice of the Pulse of Israel broadcast program, bringing us the latest news from Israel. I'd love your thoughts on WhatsApp 0618951019.